Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Taínos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness. Ever since the Declaration of Independence, we've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they've fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of, well, we're going to say first and foremost, welcome to the Nimbru Media Collective in conjunction with Your World News. These two platforms host several different shows, including Liberated Perspectives, which is where you're joining us right now. Black Alumni Voices, just earlier we did a video interview with Andrew Malenge, you know, activist, organizer, former student at the University of Maryland College Park. And so right now you are in tuned, and I say it every single week, that we have a special show, and we do every single episode that we have is vastly important. We believe so. And that's why we do this important work using our resources, and our media, platform to get news and information out there that is oftentimes obfuscated or just out and out suppressed, marginalized. But today is no different. And today is a really, really important show that we have that is going to deal with mental health, the importance of mental health awareness, resources within the realm of mental health and the Black community as well, the Black community. So we're going to deal with the stigmas that sometimes, make people feel as though they there's some type of negative aura around, seeing a therapist, going for mental health help. And we're going to break all that down. We have a special guest that will be joining us soon, Dr. Shauna Murray Brown. When she was a student of mine, she was Shauna Murray, has since gotten her PhD, gotten married. So Dr. Shauna Murray Brown will be joining us soon. And again, I'm joined in studio by my co-host, and I'll let them introduce themselves, starting with you, Dara.
I'm Dara. Again, I'm a finance major, and once again, I am excited and I'm happy that we're talking about this topic, as it's not something that's really recognized, especially within the Black community. So I'm glad to at least educate and help bring awareness to these types of issues.
Yes, and my name's Kai Bradner. I'm a senior public policy major, and to echo what Dara said, that it's such an important topic, and the continuous conversation about it helps to bring down the stigma. So I'm happy that we're all here together today.
Right on. And I just want to remind folks, as I do each week, that we have a call in line. If at any point, I would say after the interview with Dr. Murray, if you have questions, comments, personal testimonies, antidotes, you can call us at 929-477-3696. Again, that's 929-477-3696. Call that, and our dispatch will take your call. You be put on hold briefly, and then we'll bring you on to the show. And so we want to try to open up as many phone lines as we possibly can during the time that we have today. But without further ado, I want to ask Dara and Kai. In the production meeting a week ago, y'all came up with the idea that this was significant. Why this topic and why now?
I feel like it's important to recognize these struggles now. Things are becoming more prevalent and more shown in the light, and you're seeing how more day-to-day, how there are many, I'm going to speak for myself, like students and my peers are struggling in silence. They're fighting their battles. They're not trying to speak up, or they just don't feel comfortable with speaking up. They feel like they'll be too vulnerable, or people will look at them different, or even seeking help or mental health is if you like speak to a therapist, then you're seen as crazy or you're weak, and that's not the case at all. Everybody goes through whatever internal and even external struggles. And nobody's judging you for that. At the end of the day, life hits hard, and I feel like it's important that everybody feels like they're being seen and heard because your feelings are valid. And I want you to know that you're just not alone, and whenever you need to speak to somebody, it's okay to have that comfort person, that comfort thing, to just kind of bring you down and bring you towards, like, some type of escapism just for that moment or maybe even a day, just so that you're able to come back to reality, feel a little bit fresh, better, and not have so much weight on your shoulders caused by everything and everybody else. Because at the end of the day, most things and a lot of things that we stress about, we can't really control.
Thank you. Kai.
Yes, and also this topic is pretty relevant on campus for University of Maryland after an unfortunate incident that happened last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to talk about it, just to raise awareness, because, you know, there's all sorts of students struggling with violence, especially as midterm seasons roll through. We haven't had a break since Labor Day.
Yeah.
It's just constant, like, just struggle throughout the semester, and now's the time where it's getting colder, you know, winter's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's also good to talk about the resources at the campus. The Counseling Center is a great resource. Last semester, I had my 6 free sessions, and I can't recommend it enough. And it's a super easy process. Just walk in there, tell them your name, and then the rest is pretty easy. But,
yeah, I appreciate it. And I see our guest is online, and as we welcome her on, that's a great entree to, you know, to the show. And I welcome, you know, and I just want to say, wow, the phone lines are heating up. I see multiple people on in queue, which is great. So, but I want to welcome our guest on, and those that are in queue, please hold on. You know, definitely do not hang up once the interview is concluded, or if you have a question for our guest, you can do so. But we're really fortunate to, you know, to have the next 20 minutes or so Dr. Shauna Murray Brown. And I want to say this, like, this this guest we have is near and dear to me. She is somebody that I had the opportunity to mentor. She's somebody I had the opportunity to watch evolve semester by semester on campus, and without a doubt is one of the greatest student activists and organizers that I've had the opportunity to work with. She was a scholar. She found time to balance her scholarship, her social life, and to find time to give back to her community and give back. And is one of the most principled human beings that I know. Definitely was up there. I mean, there were times, and I'll put it out there. There were times that the university, you know, and I know she won't mind me mentioning this, but times where the University of Maryland tried to throw her money to stifle her outspokenness on social justice issues, and where a lot of people would have taken the money, she said, I can't be bought off. I cannot be bought off. I'm going to speak out because, you know, people need to hear what's really going on. And so I want to welcome Dr. Shauna Murray Brown onto the show. And Shauna, you're on. Can
yes.
you hear us, Dr. Murray Brown?
I sure can. Hi.
Can you hear?
Yep. Can you
welcome.
Hear
yes.
Thank you for
yes.
having
yes.
me.
No problem. Wanted to ask you, I'll start off. What got you into the work that you do, and why you you work with people from all kinds of backgrounds, but I see that you also have a certain penchant for working with women of color and people of color in general. Why?
You know, it's really interesting because I was listening to the scholars that you have on the show reflecting around the stigma and access to mental health support on campus. That was actually a turning point for me. You know, Solomon, when you were talking about my experience being an activist on campus and in multiple leadership positions, and that was some time ago, you know, but I remember because of my own experience growing up in the city of Baltimore, observing my family and the impact that the war on drugs had on the lived experience of my mother, of my father, and how that really permeated in my lineage history. The way that showed up on campus was I was working through a lot of my internal stresses that I came into the college experience with through my activism, and because I was in an environment completely surrounded by University of Maryland is a predominantly white institution that, as Solomon was accurate in all the reflection, right, when you're talking about the length to which the leadership at the institution tried to silence me, I would be in class and I would hear so many aspects and reflections that were patently racist, that were absolutely problematic, and it would trigger a lot of the childhood trauma that I experienced. And when I went to campus to identify support, it wasn't that the resources weren't accessible and that, yes, I could walk in and I could access the mental health care support. I went to Nimburu and talked to Dr. Z, and he, you know, encouraged me to seek those supports. It was that the person that was sitting on the other side of me could not get – he was not easy for me to talk to. He was very much, you know, I'm the expert. Tell me your problems and I'll tell you how to fix it, when I needed to know that I could trust him. And that was a turning point for me, because I wasn't able to access the sort of culturally informed level of healing space that I needed. And that followed me after I graduated from College Park and then went on to get my master's, worked in child welfare, worked in juvenile detention, worked in residential treatment with young black and brown folks. That, you know, could not be managed in the community, and I consistently observed therapists missing the mark. And so the reason why I like to support activists and women, black women in leadership especially, but also children specifically, is because I have the lived experience to know that it can be really difficult to be able to identify quality therapeutic and liberatory mental health care. And so what I do now is I consult large human service, nonprofit, and philanthropic institutions that say they want to support black and brown communities. I train mental health practitioners globally around what it means to decolonize their therapy practice. And since I finished my doctorate, I have returned to Hold and Healing Space for black women, but in a more unconventional way, right? Returning to the original healing ways of black folks.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing and coming on to talk to us today. My question kind of revolves around campus, and I'm Kai Brandon. Sorry to introduce myself again, but
hey.
What do you recommend us students do around campus to kind of promote, you know, mental health and, you know, having a more open campus? But there's so many people on this campus, I feel like it's hard to do proper outreach.
One of the things that I can say that I have found, both from my experience as a student on a really large campus environment like College Park when I was a student there, and also when I was a student at University of Maryland at Baltimore, The differences were the volume of student groups, and I think that the COVID-19 pandemic absolutely changed the way that students engaged on campus. And so one of the things I would identify is, you know, using the hybrid model of creating ongoing and vulnerable spaces to be able to talk about what's going on, and allowing people to be able to exist the way that they want to. So when I was a student, you know, I spent most of my time at Nimburu, but I also had pockets of community groups like Community Roots and the like that allowed me to align my passion for social justice with talking vulnerably about how I was doing mentally and emotionally. The other thing is, I would say not to underestimate the value of your friendships, you know, really taking deep pride in, like, what do you do if you have a close friend that you can see struggling with a mental health challenge, like getting some training around how to support them without making them feel alienated or like they're going crazy, you know. And so those were the things that I would say is, one is to continue to create environments where there's a space for vulnerability and authenticity, to make use of the non-conventional or unconventional spaces where you can talk vulnerably about what's going on with you, but also to really fortify the relationships that you have. When they say checking on your strong friends, yeah, do that, but also, you know, become familiar with how to support somebody when they are going through an overwhelming mental health challenge without alienating them.
Thank you.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm Dara. I just introduced myself. So my question with midterms coming up, and I know a lot of people take their grades as something that defines them, but my question would be, are there any strategies that you have or that you've put into practice to address the mental health impact of academic pressure? So, like, that's referring to, like, exams, or even if you're listening and you're not in university yet, getting into college admissions, just things like that. Like, do you have any any ways that you kind of helped yourself or others cope with the pressures of always succeeding? And sorry.
Thank you so much. Yeah, no, that was a great question. And I would say this is really fresh for me. because while it is true that I am not an undergrad anymore, I just finished the graduate school. And so there's a few things that I would say. The first thing is, I think it's super important for us to remember that the whole concept of overachievement is a social construct that keeps us from caring deeply for ourselves. So what I mean by that is the idea of being a hyperachiever, an overachiever, feeling like you have to earn that A or get that B in order to be considered a good student, specifically was designed to keep us connected to the capitalistic and patriarchal system that dehumanizes us, right? And so I say that because it's super important to recognize that caring deeply for yourself is a radical act. It is a level of activism that helps us to really be able to transform the world. And so especially for those that would be listening to this radio show, right, many folks have a social justice-oriented mindset. I think one of the things that might help is to recognize that doing, taking care of yourself and, you know, employing some of the strategies I'm going to mention is actually work, right? And you can consider that a part of your activism and scholarly work, right? That rest is a part of your resistance. So a few of the things that the strategies that I would use, so I teach and hold space for mind-body medicine. So that is original healing ways connected to the way that people of African descent and folks of color across the globe have always healed. So that is meditation. I teach and have studied Qigong for a while. And so movement and silence are really specific aspects. So when I was preparing for an exam, I would put on my calendar blocks of time that I would study and whole blocks, like 2 hours of time where I would commit to doing absolutely nothing productive, right, to give my brain an opportunity to rest. Other times I would create morning rituals, so morning practices that I would start my morning off with every day, even if it was 10 minutes or if it was only 3 minutes of silent breath. Oftentimes I would use some of the free applications. There's a Headspace app. There's the Calm app. Or even if you don't want an application or if you old school and you ain't listening to no, you're not using an app, using YouTube and for guided meditations and calming music to start my day instead of looking directly at my phone to be able, you know, to start the day, waking up to text messages and notifications. The second thing that I would do is cut off that social media, right? Like literally, you know, I love apps. So utilizing the apps to interrupt how the volume or how frequently you can be in the application. I just took Instagram off my phone and TikTok off my phone for the 50,000th time. I removed all of the notifications from my phone so that I could focus. And then the last thing is scheduling in breather times to get out of the house, times to get out of your dorm, get off of the computer, to go outside and to meet up with friends, even if it's just we're going to go and eat, we're going to grab a bite, but forcing yourself to shift the activity of your mind from focusing solely on writing that paper or working on those midterms to scheduling time away from the computer. Because when you do that, when you break up the monotony of studying and writing to going outside, getting fresh air, and communicating with the folks that care about you, that actually increases the volume and the likelihood of your brain being able to acquire more information to be able to remember information. And those are a few of the strategies that we use.
Thank you. That is so instructive, and I want to get right to it. And you know, the question I'm about to ask you, it's not a surprise that I'm going to ask you this question, just based on our history. And you know, I want to kind of lead with a quote from when James Baldwin said, you know, to be conscious and black in the United States is to be in a constant state of rage. I want to ask you about the impact and how folks can navigate the impact of living black in the United States. It is one of the more institutionally racist countries in the world, and that's where kind of Baldwin was saying conscious, because a lot of people are unconscious to this and not realizing I think that we as black folks, a lot of us have PhDs in understanding oppression and understanding, you know, being mm-hmm. turned away from jobs because of our name or the color of our skin, you know, the red line, the gentrification that goes on, you know, not being able to receive FHA home loans that are still being negated from folks because of the color of skin. What can black folks and writ large people of color, what are some of the things they can do while navigating their being, you know, the melanin and in this country where it you can be persecuted because of the color of your skin?
Yeah. One of the things, I'm going to push back a little bit, Solomon, with the way that we talk about this, right? Because we're not being persecuted because of the color of our skin. The color of our skin is fantastic. The society has mm-hmm. the problem, right? We're not the problem. And so that's the first thing that I would say, right, is to, because we are often indoctrinated with these ideas that, you know, it's because of the color of my skin. No, it's not. It's because something is wrong with them. You know what I'm saying? Because, and this is a historical and systematic and oppressive system that wants to eat us alive, right? It's because of that devouring system that has the intention to disconnect you from your body. And that would be the first thing that I would say, right? The reason why it's super important for us to be careful with how we talk about it, and I do this too, so no shade, Solomon, for that. But, you know, I do this too. So the first thing is assessing and grounding in the way that we talk to ourselves, how we're receiving the messaging of society and how this impacts what we think and feel about what is true, right? So something as simple as shifting it, removing the language of because of the color of my skin out of our lexicon can support us in looking at the world in a way that is our truth and not the oppressor's truth, right? And so that's the first thing, shifting our mindset and assessing how we talk to ourselves about what's actually happening. And a healthy way, a helpful and healthy way to do that is in spaces like this where we can have reflexive discourse about, you know, how the outside world is making us feel overwhelmed, and having the kind of space where we've had really established and healthy relationships with each other where we can say, all right, I'm going to push back on that. Let's shift our conversation in the way that you're talking to yourself. Here's an example. One of my best friends from college actually works at College Park right now. Her name is Melissa. I was talking to her just yesterday about a health concern that I'm having and I was thinking that something was wrong with me, right? Where I was like, wow, you know, like I don't know why my body is acting like this, you know, and she was like, actually, Shauna, nothing is wrong with your body, right? Like your body is responding to the societal system. And then she guided me into, and now let me support you in not being solely reliant on these outside systems to be able to get your needs met. So that would be the second thing. So, yes, use the resources that you have at your access, right? Go and get the therapy. Go to your medical establishment. Use some of the resources that you may have as a student or as a professional to take care of your mental health. But also don't forget the original healing ways in your own family, in your own community. Don't underestimate that. Because what Melissa was telling me, she was like, well, Shauna, you know the herbal remedy for that, right? Like, go downstairs and make yourself XYZ concoction. Didn't auntie teach you how to make XYZ, right? So that's the other thing. Don't disregard the ways you already know to take care of yourself just because it is not something that is often sort of like fed to us. And the third thing that I would say is we really need to rest. Like, we need to use our leave. I took a 5-month sabbatical after completing my PhD because I was so messed up. I was so disconnected from my body. I was so sick. My mind was, I was so fried, I couldn't even imagine, meaning I could not access an imagination any longer, right? And so that's the other thing is taking a break, deciding, listen, you know, after you take your, if for the students, after you take your midterm, don't jump into another student leadership role. Right after, when the student, if you're an administrator on campus or you're supporting students, like, create some spaciousness in between your schedule. Stop blocking stuff over and over again where you can't even access your imagination. You can't even allow yourself to rest and really, really commit to doing absolutely nothing. I don't know how else to say it. Because the truth is that when we are on that autopilot and when we are moving constantly, that is the oppressor's greatest win, because then we're functioning as robots. We're not functioning as humans, and that's how we forget who we are. That's how we forget how to heal ourselves. Those are a few of the things that I would say specifically about that: addressing our mindset, remembering our original healing ways, and committing and making a commitment to prolonged periods of rest. Prolonged, you get to define what prolonged is. Is that taking a full day off where you put your phone on do not disturb? Or is that, you know, taking all of your leave all at one time so that you can recalibrate? But being super strategic about fortifying yourself as a human being is sleeping and resting and going outside and taking off your shoes and not feeling like you have to spend money to access any of these things. Literally going outside and putting your feet onto the grass is an original healing way of our people. Drinking some tea without watching the news is an original healing way and can be a pathway to accessing rest.
No, that's dope. I appreciate that. And I actually appreciate your, no shade intended, like, appreciate your clarification. You know me better than that. You know, but I'm glad you said that, because oftentimes our language, you know, because, you know, I'm one person that, you know, definitely I know there's absolutely zero wrong with our melanin and it is society. Because
yeah.
I always tell folks, when people tell me, like, oh, you're so, you know, like, you know, radical outspoken, I said, no, it's the society we live in. I said, why is it radical for someone to speak out against police brutality or speak out against imperialism or speak out against all these different injustices? I said, in a socially just society, that would be the norm.
Yep.
That would be the norm.
Yep.
It's only seen as,
yeah,
oh, you're radical because
yep,
no one else, like, you know, because you know, far too many people, you know, decide not to. And I'm talking about, like, people that are in positions of, and you know what I'm talking about, even like being on campus, like some high ranking, you know, administrators on campus, and they just, or tenured professors, and they don't speak out and they don't use their platform in the way, like, you know, one of our good friends, Dr. Joseph Richardson, does, you know, who's
mm-hmm,
one of the great scholars, you know, doing amazing things. And so I'm so glad that, and even another word like we, like not taking ownership about, like, oh my gosh, we're bombing that country. No, no, you're not a part of that decision making
exactly.
process. No, no, we are not. They are. They are. Congress is, Senate is, the president is, your government is. Shauna, I want to, before we let you go, can you tell us, because people are listening right now, and I want to actually want to do like a few more of these. We want to do a few more of these mm-hmm. with you and to kind of welcome you on again and again, you know, if you're available to that. But before you respond to that, can you tell folks that are listening right now, I'm getting stuff in the chat, where can people get information on your work? You know, because we have a lot of folks that are based in Maryland, and I'm assuming that you probably do even virtual stuff for people that are based outside of the state of Maryland. How can people get in contact with Dr. Shauna Murray Brown?
Yeah. Thank you, Solomon, for the emphasis on the doctor. Okay, thank you. I missed a lot of sleep getting to that. All right. So on social media, on Instagram, excuse me, on Instagram, my handle is Heal Assista. That's HEALASISTA. Heal Assista is my Instagram handle. You can find me on my website, which is literally my name. If you know how to spell my name, you know how to find me, and it's Shauna Murray Brown with an E, shawnamurraybrowne.com. The kinds of spaces that I'm offering right now are twofold. On the one hand, right, folks that are in institutions or organizations that say that they want to, you know, uphold the wellness needs of the Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities. I like to focus on fortifying Black, Indigenous, and folks of color leaders in those institutions, providing liberatory strategy and mind-body healing space. And, you know, so you can find that information there. For folks that are therapists, mental health practitioners, community organizers, and change makers that are super, super passionate about mental health care and mental wellness. My training, Decolonizing Therapy for Black Folks, is a 16-hour training intensive for practitioners and folks that are passionate about healing for Black folks that's actually accessible to not only Black folks, but anybody who's passionate about the liberation of Black people. That information can be found on my website, and my training will be opening within the next few weeks. And, you know, I am returning to holding healing space for Black women, starting in Baltimore, but I travel if people want to put me on a plane and give me some place to sleep so I can hold healing space to support Black women leaders and sitting at the feet, the proverbial feet of our ancestors, Black women in the civil rights movement, and connecting that to our original healing ways for the now. How can we learn from some of the greats in the civil rights movement and apply their wisdoms from their oral histories into our strategy for reclaiming ourselves and reconnecting to the land? That's also information that can be found at shawnamurraybrown.com.
That's awesome. Seriously awesome. I'll use we now. Yeah. We all appreciate you coming on. Shout outs to, you know, I told Dr. Ziegler about this, Ms. Carswell. Yeah. I told them they were extremely ecstatic that, yeah. So
I love that.
That's right. And Nimbura loves you. Nimbura loves you. So, but I want to, thank you for coming on. And
Thank you.
Congrats.
Oh, y'all are so welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure. Yeah. I appreciate y'all.
Right on.
Keep doing a good work.
Right on. And can you, before you go, can you, can I get a yes that we can get you on here again in the future?
Yes. I can't say if it's going to be in 2023. Okay. We're going to see what we can do.
Yeah.
But I got you for sure in the 2024. Okay. You see how that rhymes?
And I'll tell you this right now. I've already put it out. I'm just putting it out there. You know, I'm putting my name on it right now. We're gonna work on getting you. I've already had preliminary conversations with Nimbura folks about this, but bringing you in to actually do some talks and paying you, you know, because your time is valuable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, getting you an honorarium to come in and talk to our students, you know, do some type of panel or kind of forum centered around you and your work, that would be fantastic. So
that would be dope. I'm here for it.
Yeah. All right. And tell your husband
right.
I said hello, and tell your daughter I look forward to giving her a big hug.
Yay. Absolutely. I sure will.
All right. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
All right. Peace. That was my former student and now good friend, Dr. Shauna Murray Brown. And I emphasize Doc because she you know, has all the bona fides and put the work in to getting that it is, you know, getting a terminal degree, you know, going to grad school, it is it's like academic hazing. It is like academic hazing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's much more than what you know. It's like, how much can you endure? And so, I really understand that. Like when she says she needed to take, you know, 5 months off or several months off to just kind of regroup, that's so, so necessary. So I appreciate her coming on. And I see we have a caller on line one. Welcome, our caller. Can you hear me? Thanks for waiting patiently. Can you hear me? 240, can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you. Hello? Anytime you're ready to come on. I don't know if you because you've been on hold for the entire interview, so I don't know if you know that you're on right now, but you know, when you're ready, just, you know, go ahead and let us know in the chat room. But I want to turn it to you guys. Like, what do you what stands out? What about Dr. Murray Brown?
Just all the points of separating, like, well, okay, I'm just going to first start off by speaking about what she brought up. Like, just bringing yourself kind of, getting yourself a little more grounded, bringing yourself back to earth, like, deleting all your social media, taking time for yourself, taking a break. I feel like that's really important to implicate because you don't realize that it's okay to not know everything. You're not expected to know everything, and nobody's forcing you to, like, be perfect, because perfect doesn't exist
exactly. In
our world.
Yeah.
So I kind of really, that kind of stuck with me because I can say for myself, I have deleted Instagram, like, as of recently, off of my phone, just because I realized that I would go on it, and I wouldn't even realize how much I did spend time on that app, just, like, scrolling, even on TikTok, just, like, scrolling, and I do try to limit myself, and it more so comes from self-discipline. I feel like with all mental health practices, you have to want to do it. You have to want to get help. And you have to discipline yourself to understand that, or to understand that you're getting the help that's best for you. And it's going to take time, but at the end of the day, at least it matters most that you're trying and you've asked for help. Because getting past the denial and saying that you don't need help or you don't want to talk to somebody, you could be struggling in a way that you don't understand. It could be better for you. Everything could be better. You just have to want it to get better for yourself. And what else? I don't remember what question this had to go to, but I did want to bring up the fact that Black people live their entire lives on survival mode. And most often than not, that stems from generational trauma and all of these responses that we have or that we know to have, such as, like, or things growing up that you hear, those are our trauma responses. So emotional and psychological reactions that we all experience, those are just, like, generations of, like, trigger warning, like rape or pillaging or dehumanizing our ancestors constantly. And I feel like as a community, we've all endured so much. We always get beat down or try to get feed it and kind of take that in, build from it, move on. But we never hurt anybody else. If anything, we're there, always the ones supporting others. And I feel like it's time for us to be supported, us to get help, or not just get help, but, like, be heard. Because anybody can listen to you, but anybody can hear you, but they're not listening. And the struggle with that is a lot of therapists, there's only like 4% of therapists are Black, but most times that's hard to find because they're not culture competent. So you can't have somebody who doesn't relate to you tell you what they think is best for you. I personally just don't agree. Like, I don't think that works best, and I don't think that's the best way for our community to have hope. So just bringing awareness and knowing that it's okay to not know, and it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah, and to kind of go off of that, I really appreciate the point of radical love and how separate yourself from the things you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we might have, going to school, but that's not who we are. We're humans at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And those, like, clashes and stuff don't define us and can define us.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to use that to define yourself will never bring fulfillment. And it's very important that, we all respect ourselves and understand ourselves. And I think taking moments to ground yourself is really important. After my therapy session, I started journaling in the morning grounding
mm-hmm.
sessions, or listening to like a meditation to kind of set up the day and set the intentions. So I think that's really helped. Because as you were saying, you kind of have to put in the effort to get better. And that can seem really scary and daunting and hard and impossible often, but small steps every day kind of lead to, routines, and eventually things will get better. That's my thing. Things always get better.
Since you just put it out there, I want to ask you, Did you ever feel reticent? Was there any like inner inertia on your part based on any kind of stigma, to go see a therapist or go see counseling?
Yeah, I'm still kind of dealing with that stigma myself, because it took me a while to go get my successions. I didn't really tell anyone at first because I was like, I don't know, it makes me a little uncomfortable to talk about my own mental health. But
mm-hmm.
I think going kind of helped open up that Pandora's box.
Mm-hmm.
I told my friends, and some of them have gone as well. But after the 6 sessions, they offer, to find resources outside of the campus. But I haven't really done that yet, and I need to. I think that's due to, bring up the conversations, family and stuff like that. But I think, as I was saying myself, that you just have to do uncomfortable stuff sometimes.
Yeah. And I also wanted to bring up the point of just mental health and being a Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in teens, we are just expected to deal with pain and suffering and all this unfairness. Keyword, we're supposed to be just pushing through. We're supposed to push through any hard times. We're supposed to take care of everybody, take care
mm-hmm.
of ourselves,
yes.
deal with everything. But yet, who's here to take care of me? Or not take care, but to help me. And it's just, at the same time, as a Black woman speaking for myself, I'm supposed to be vulnerable, but I'm not supposed to be too aggressive. But even when I'm not aggressive,
mm-hmm.
I'm passionate. But don't
right.
be too passionate, because to others, they're going to take that in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no room for me to make any mistakes, or I'll viciously be judged.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do any wrong. And I just feel like that trope, that strong Black woman trope, it's not always a compliment. It stems back to those times, the 400 plus years, where we didn't have a choice. We either had to be strong, or it was either be strong or you choose death. That was because we had to take care of others. We just had to be the nurturers and nurture everybody without being nurturing ourselves. And it's hard. And also, I think the stigma around Black folks getting help, a lot of times they'll say, or you'll be seen as weak, especially, well, I can't speak from a Black man's perspective, but I have heard, real men don't cry, or
yeah.
stuff like that, or
I grew up with that stuff.
Yeah, or if you need help, you need to go to church, you need to pray about it. I feel like
mm-hmm.
we should be able to not only pray about it, bring God
yeah.
into all of our relationships, but also talk to someone. or finding our niche, just doing something to get us away from that mindset or even that depression that we may have.
Yeah.
Because even going into depression, like, if there was a study that says, like, why teenagers, when they experience depression, they get proper help and things like that, but when this behavior is shown to Black and Latino students, it's disruptive and you get misdiagnosed.
Yeah,
so there's nobody. And so there's nobody really that can understand how much help we need, and also that not encourages others to be emotionally distant.
Yeah.
Which also can cause people to not open up more and feel like they can share however feelings they have towards whatever they might be going through. So, and I feel like mental health, like, it's, like I said earlier, not only internally but externally, I feel like there's a lot of things that go on in the Black community
that physically we're
dealing with, such as, like, colorism or others wanting to have, like, Eurocentric features. And
yep.
The superiority or the thought of being lighter is gives you some type of superiority, but that only gives more power to our oppressors. And from that, it builds on to colorism. And
the hair, too. What drives, so many Black women to, like, believe that That's some type of beauty ideal that, by having straight hair.
These are just categories that were created to divide. Like, there's no other way of saying it. Well, for now. Until I learn more, there's no other way of saying that. But these are just ways to divide our community and make other people feel like they have more power over us when in reality, you need to look past that. Like, we're all the same. It might not all be because of skin color or race, but at the end of the day, the roots of these problems stem back to the same group of people.
And you brought up a point about diagnosis, and I just want to bring up a statistic that African Americans are, like, significantly more likely to be misdiagnosed. And as you're saying, they stand as a problem, and then misdiagnosis kind of continues that cycle.
But
the bad kids put them separated from the rest of the class, isolate them, make them feel more, alone. And then colorism and all that stuff is just based in, like, pop culture and, as you said, hyper-capitalistic society where we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people, who has the best grades, and then kind of have to build up from there. And it starts when we're little kids and it goes until we die.
And even, like, as of recently, also another trigger warning, like, suicide rates have been going up because not enough people have feeling like they're being heard. And these are just, like the whys, because not enough professionals are able to relate. Why is that? Because the education and the access for help isn't there, and it isn't shared when it's most needed. And why is that? It goes all back to the oppressors and not valuing our lives as cautiously as they should, and dehumanizing, or not even just seeing us as people. They're just seeing us as...
Yeah, this historic dehumanization and then the present trauma as well just adds to it. And then the distrust with the medical institutions. I mean, for valid reasons, Tuskegee experiments and just mixed diagnosis and the amount of mortality rates for pregnant women and stuff like that. It all adds together. It's like, it can feel really, like, what do we do? Where do we go from here? But having conversations like this kind of, promote this sense of collective business, I think.
Yeah, and even if you do not recognize, like, I'm kind of going back to, trauma responses, because this goes within your mental health. Even if you don't recognize it, I guarantee you, you've heard, like, some of these before, like, fix your face, never let your guard down, don't let them see your weakness, hustle and hustle culture is also a trauma response, but I think help over hustle is the way to go, like, code switching is a trauma response, addiction to, like, unhealthy foods, but that's because we didn't have a choice.
The food deserts, there's a lot of African-American communities and people of color.
Chemicals in our hair.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling like we always have to straighten it, or it always has to be a certain texture or curl pattern. That's a trauma response, because who told you that you're not beautiful? Who told you that that's wrong? And if it was wrong, it wouldn't be. You wouldn't be that. Everybody has a purpose, and I feel like it's important to understand and find your purpose as you go through life. But just know that there's not just know that because one person doesn't think you're
it's just because someone might tell you something doesn't mean that's true, you know.
Yeah.
We all have our shared individual living experiences, and you have to do what's for you.
If you were truly loved, then reality is God wouldn't put you that way. He wouldn't put you in a position that you couldn't handle. So.
Mm-hmm. And we're capable of so much. It's hard to, like, realize our potential, especially over feeling bad, but we're all capable of, you know, great things.
And
that's
even
right.
As, a,
that's right.
As it comes to, like, you feeling like you're not, I'm just playing, like, saying randomly, that you're either not feeling like as successful as you may be, or putting grades, letting that define you, no grade is worth your life.
Yeah.
So
that's a great point.
Don't let, I've always wanted to say, don't let that define you. I'm not going to look at you. If you have a bad grade, there could be a plethora of reasons why you are turning out in this class, but that doesn't mean you're dumb. That doesn't mean you lack. That just has everything else that doesn't have to do with me.
School's
like,
hard. Every struggle.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is.
I feel like you should be able to, yes, battle your or have your silent battles, but don't be afraid to come out and share those experiences, because you never know what can help another person.
That's right. Yeah. That's definitely right, and I think you know what both of you have said is super important, and I think that the significance of this merits, you know, future shows on this topic, because we get in these positions where sometimes we feel overwhelmed, and when you feel overwhelmed, you can feel kind of caged, you know, psychologically and mentally, and you know, we want folks to know that there are resources out there. If you're on the campus, University of Maryland, there are resources within the counseling center. As a matter of fact, they have a students of color walk in. They've got several black male and female counselors. And if you're off campus and you're on the World Wide Web and you stumbled upon this show, please feel free, our email information to contact the show is directly there. And whatever way, you know, we can use our resources, we may not know, but, you know, there are, you know, folks like Shauna that we can try to tap into and find out what resources there are out there. But you are not alone. You are not alone. All right. And, you know, I just want you guys, everyone, to know that.
And even if you try to come over your battle by yourself, you can always do activities such as going to the gym, mm-hmm. creating a journal, like Kai said, like just writing in your journal. You can draw, color, something that makes you feel calm, listen to music, find a support group.
Doesn't have to be big, be anything really.
Find a safe person and hope be able to, for me, my safe person is my parents. I'm able to share with my parents my experiences and things like that.
And with that being said, thanks for joining us. We'll see you on the next episode in 2 weeks. Peace.
Bye-bye.
There you go. Good.